Well, about 10 years ago, I was leading a youth group in the city of Oxford, and sometimes in the group, we would spend a bit of time looking at big objections to Christianity. So it was a mixed group. Some of the teenagers would have called themselves Christians, some definitely wouldn't. And we just said, well, let's look at some of the things that people say why I'm not a Christian. And often they centered around the three S's, if you like, which are sex, science, and suffering. So we would say, well, science, doesn't that disprove God? You sex, what about, isn't the Bible anti-sex? And suffering, why does a good God allow suffering? We'd spend some time looking at each of these headings. I remember the night we were thinking about suffering. And we began just by asking the group what they thought about this whole question and the levels of suffering they saw around themselves in the world. And I'll never forget one of the group said, he was a lovely guy, really good guy, but he admitted he wasn't that interested in the problem of suffering. And here's what he said, suffering the world doesn't really bother me, he sort of smiled. I mean, I think there's probably just the right amount of suffering in the world today. And as he said that, myself and the other leader just looked at each other and winced. And both thought, here's someone who's maybe not suffered yet in their lives. Whatever else we make of Job chapter 3 and the chapters immediately following, one thing is clear, Job isn't okay with suffering. Job is deeply troubled by his suffering. He's not quiet in the face of it. He's not calm about it. He doesn't think his suffering is probably just the right amount. Job's suffering, and he hates it. Job chapter 3, verse 20. Why is light given to those in misery and life to the bitter of soul? And the end, I have no peace, no quietness. I have no rest, but only turmoil. Job is deeply troubled by his experience of suffering. Again, I think that guy in the youth group, for him, it was just kind of just an academic question. What do we think about suffering? Oh, we'll think about that. But I want us to see, for Job, it is not just an academic question. Job is crying out his questions and the repeated refrain, why, out of an experience of suffering himself. Out of enormous loss and pain, out of emotional, physical, and spiritual pain. And we said a bit last week, the book of Job is a book about a man who experiences enormous suffering, written to help people who will experience suffering. We said last week, the book of Job is actually a precious gift from a loving God to his people, because God knows we're going to need a book like this sometimes. We ourselves will need the message of this book. Maybe people we know and love and care about will need the message of this book. Job is written for all of us. I quoted this guy last week, but it's worth reminding us again. And Christopher Ashe, writing on Job, he says, behind most front doors, there lies pain, often hidden, sometimes long and drawn out, sometimes very deep. Some people we know about their suffering, other people we don't, but the book of Job is written for all of us. And we need to say that Job gives us language, gives us words to say in the face of suffering. And the words aren't always pretty. You read over Job, and it's hard work. You sort of feel uncomfortable. I've been finding it reading this. It becomes exhausting after a while. And it's right to tremble a little before a book like Job. You've got to tread carefully. The language is raw and it's painful, but it's a language God knows we need to hear. So we're going to be thinking today about Job's experience of suffering and how he puts words to that experience and then what that has to say to us. So last week, we've kind of recapped it already with Chris in the old age slot, but we thought about chapters 1 and 2 of Job and Job and what happened to him there. And we learned there that Job is a genuine believer in the living God. He's a good man. He's a loving father. And yet he loses everything, his possessions, his family, his physical health. And the writer of Job reveals to us as readers what's really going on. So we learn that contrary to appearances, God is not angry with Job. God is not punishing Job for unrepentant sin. Actually, verse 1 tells us Job was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. So the reason Job is suffering is because God is allowing Satan to attack him. And why is God doing that? Because Satan believes that no one in this world really loves God for who he is. People only love God because God gives good things. Take away the good things and everyone will curse God and reject him. And it's in response to that challenge, that belief, that God allows Job to go through this time of suffering. So Job's suffering, if you like, has a cosmic purpose to it. But Job doesn't know that. In fact, Job never gets to understand the bigger purpose behind his suffering. And I think that's a really big reason why, for Job, his suffering is so intense. He doesn't know why this is happening. And in that, he is very like us. So let's look at these opening chapters. At the end of chapter 2, we were introduced to Job's friends, who will play a very big part in the rest of the book. We're going to deal with them more next week, but just to introduce them, we've got Eliphaz, the Temanite, Bildad, the Shuhite, Zophar, the Naamathite. And like Job himself, none of these are Israelites, and they arrive on the scene with the very best of intentions. At the end of chapter 2, verse 11, they want to sympathize with Job in his loss and comfort him. So these three friends, their intentions are good. And also at least one of them, Eliphaz, comes from the land of Edom. And Edom in the Old Testament was a land associated with wisdom. People would go to Edom, the people there, to learn wisdom. So Eliphaz at least is someone representing real wisdom. And yet, Eliphaz and the others see Job, and all they can do in the face of his pain and anguish is sit in silence. Verse 13 of chapter 2, then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights. No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. In the face of Job's suffering, all their wisdom, all their good intentions just falter, and they sit in silence with him. They can say nothing to him. And a lot of commentators sort of argue that sitting in silence was the best thing Job's friends ever did for Job. And we're going to see next week when they do finally open their mouths, what they say isn't great comfort or wisdom for Job. But actually, while sitting in silence might be a good thing to do initially, this silence lasts for 7 days and 7 nights. They just can't say anything to him. They are no help to him at all. Far from comforting him, his friends are treating Job as if he were dead already. They're just sitting there, silent. They're treating him like a corpse here. In that culture, you would often sit with a dead body for a while after it had died. That's kind of how they're treating their friend Job. And what effect does that have? Well, Job's anguish flows out of it. I want to say Job chapter 3, in its most intense, it's about just how alone Job feels in his suffering. It's about his loneliness. His friends are sitting right next to him, but they could be a million miles away for all the comfort they bring. For Job, his suffering cuts him off from other people. And again, that is something that suffering does. You feel other people around you, they're okay, they're laughing, they're doing well in life, but you are alone. You are terribly alone, just like Job at the end of chapter 2. And then chapter 3, verse 1, after this, Job opened his mouth. Sort of another translation is, finally, Job broke the silence. No one else is speaking, so finally, Job says, well, I am going to speak. And we get to listen to what's going on in Job's heart. And chapter 3, I want to say, there are lots of dark chapters in the book. This is maybe the darkest. Job isn't really talking to God. He's not really talking to his friends. He's just pouring out his grief. And of course, the big question from chapters 1 and 2 that Satan makes is, will Job, in response to his suffering, curse God? Will he curse God? And actually, we see that Job has refused to do that up to now. Even when his wife comes and tells him, curse God and die, Job, stop carrying on. He refuses to do that. What he does do is he curses the day he was born. Chapter 3, verse 3, may the day of my birth perish and the night that said, a boy is conceived. That day, may it turn to darkness. May God above not care about it. May no light shine on it. May gloom and utter darkness claim it once more. May a cloud settle over it. May blackness overwhelm it. Again, the day of a child's birth is a day of joy for parents. Job's birth was probably no different, but he says no, he wants that day cut out of history. Verse 4, that night when he was conceived, may thick darkness seize it. May it not be included among the days of the year, nor be entered into any of the months. May that night be barren. May no shout of joy be heard in it. Again, the night of Job's conception, maybe a shout of joy came up as his parents made love. They had this child, but he goes, no, I want that night just never to have happened. Job wishes he had never been born. Verse 11, why did I not perish at birth and die as I came from the womb? It's horrific language, but it's Job's grief spilling out. And all Job can imagine to end his suffering is death. He's suffering physically, this constant physical pain with sores from the soles of his feet to the top of his head, we're told. He's suffering emotionally. He's lost his family. And the only comfort he can imagine is death. And for Job, death is this dim, shadowy place where all the activity and the relationships around him stop and come to an end. It's a place of nothingness for Job. We need to be clear, Job isn't longing for heaven here. He's longing for nothing. He just doesn't want to feel anything anymore. He can't imagine a future where his life might get better, and he just wants it all to end. He's pouring out his heart. And later in chapter 6, he says this to his friends, if only my anguish could be weighed and all my misery be placed on the scales, it would surely outweigh the sands of the sea. No wonder my words have been impetuous. In a sense, his friends already are beginning to challenge him, go, well, hang on a minute, steady on, Job, you're being a bit extreme there. And he goes, well, yes, I am being extreme because my suffering feels extreme. Yes, my words sound impetuous to you, but you don't get just how much I'm hurting. And to make things even worse, Job has this terrifying feeling that God is behind it, that God is out to get him. Chapter 6, verse 4, the arrows of the Almighty are in me. My spirit drinks in their poison. God's terrors are marshaled against me. This picture of God, the Almighty, El Shaddai is the Hebrew. Again, this isn't the God of close relationship, the covenant God we thought of last week, Yahweh. This is El Shaddai, and he's an archer, and he's just firing arrows into Job. And to make it worse, the arrows are dripping with poison. This is just how intense Job feels. God is out to get me. It feels like that, he says to his friends. And of course, we ask the question, well, is Job right to blame God for his suffering? And from chapters 1 and 2, we know a bit more than Job. We know that it's Satan who is attacking Job here. But we also know that Satan can only do that because the Lord allows him to. Is Job right to blame God? Well, yes and no. There is a deeper thing going on, but Job doesn't see it, and he's telling us what it feels like. And then chapter 7, if you turn over to that, verses 17 to 19, Job pleads with God. Here there's real echoes of one of the Psalms, of Psalm 8. It's a wonderful psalm, actually, reflecting on creation. And the psalmist there says, what is mankind that you're mindful of them, human beings that you care for them? It's a wonderful psalm going, you care so much for people, God. It's amazing. But then Job turns it into a parody almost. Verse 17, what is mankind that you make so much of them, that you give them so much attention, that you examine them every morning and test them every moment? Will you never look away from me or let me alone, even for an instant? See, for Job, the fact that God notices him and sees him, that's not a comfort to him. He just wants God, leave me alone, God, please. He just wants to be left alone. And this is a godly man. Job chapter 1, this is a man who fears God and shuns evil. What we can see, these are just, they're these raw words. They're impossible to ignore. They're uncomfortable to read. What difference do these bits of Job make to us? What are we to make of this difficult book? Well, the first thing I think this chapter, these chapters say to us is very simply, suffering hurts. And we can be honest about that. It's a very obvious thing to say, but actually I think that is important for us to get from Job here. A real believer, like Job, can go through times of real suffering, whether emotional, physical, or spiritual. Trusting in Jesus does not exempt anyone from suffering. And we need to be clear about that. Job's suffering isn't a result of his backsliding or his sinning or his hypocrisy. Quite the opposite. Job is suffering precisely because he is godly. It's an amazing picture here. Job shows us that real believers in Jesus will experience suffering in their lives, sometimes to a huge extent, and that suffering hurts when it comes. And there's no two ways about that. It hurts us. And why I think that matters is because it's possible to have quite a shallow version of Christianity or a shallow vision of the church even. So we can give the message that Christianity is for people who are strong and capable and calm and always smiling. Maybe there was suffering in the past, but that's before they met Jesus. And then now everything's fine, actually. I trust Jesus and my life is so much better. And one effect of that message, whether it's spoken or unspoken, is that if you are struggling or suffering, the message kind of is, please, can you just stay away for a while? And I mean, you just stay home for a while, and when you're fine, you can come back and we can join in again, but just for now, you're getting everyone a bit down. Just either cheer up or leave. And if that is our vision of the Christian life or vision for the church, Job would have no place among us. Job should have no place in our Bibles, but here it is. I want to say that attitude towards suffering of just please stay away, I just don't want to face up to that, that adds to that feeling of loneliness and isolation we've already spoken about. Suffering says no one else gets it, just stay away, just stay away. Maybe you'll get better one day and you can come back, but for now, just stay away. But here is Job, a book in the Word of God, we believe, that does understand us, that does get us when we're suffering, that doesn't ask us to go away or to keep quiet, that invites us to pour out our hearts in times of grief. And that, again, is why this book is such a precious book for Christians. Because in the midst of our suffering, when we're hurting and hurting badly, we can know that God is there and he is not silent. He understands us. He gets us. He invites us to come to him. So what difference should that make to our life together as a church family? I think it just means we need to treat one another when we're going through those times of grief and pain, for whatever reason, with kindness and patience and compassion. Again, we said last week that the whole purpose of Scripture, the whole purpose of the Bible, is to help us to love God and love the people around us. And in a sense, this is part of the love the people around us bit. To open our eyes, actually, yes, people do experience great suffering. People will say horrific things maybe in the midst of that suffering about themselves, about their families, about their God. But we need to be patient and to acknowledge their pain. We need to be kind and demonstrate compassion because God is a God of loving kindness and compassion. We don't have all the answers. We shouldn't avoid people who are suffering. Instead, we can be confident that by loving them, by asking God to help us love them, God will be at work in that situation. God will reveal something to us and to them that we perhaps couldn't learn any other way. We are called to love suffering people, to listen to them, to take their suffering seriously, and then when it's our turn, we long and pray that others will listen to us and love us and suffer alongside us. Job's friends think they have to have all the answers. We'll see more of that next week. We don't have to have all the answers. There's a huge amount of mystery in this book. But we can learn from God what it means to love people in times of suffering. And we need to do that because suffering hurts. The second thing is very closely linked. I think what we learn from these chapters in Job, which is we can bring our suffering and our questions to God and be honest with him. Again, you read a book like Job and the question keeps coming, well, how would I respond? How am I going to respond? Maybe how did I respond when that happened? This question says, how do I handle a time of suffering when I don't know why it is happening, when I don't understand why God is allowing me to go through it? And Job tells us we handle suffering, we relate and respond to suffering by bringing it to God and bringing our questions to God and being honest before him and telling him how we feel. Job is not afraid in these chapters, I hope we've seen, of sharing. And that's why Job is a deeply uncomfortable book. He just says things that maybe we think, maybe we feel sometimes, but we would never say it out in public. But Job does. And he does that because he knows God is big enough to take our honest outpourings of questions and pain. And Job isn't the only book in the Bible that does that. All the way through Scripture, God's people go through times of real turmoil and they ask real questions. Just think of some of the early Psalms. Psalm 10, verse 1. Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Psalm 13. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? What these Psalms and what the book of Job tell us is are two things, really. One, we will not always understand what God is doing in our lives. But two, we can tell him about it. We can talk to him, and we need to talk to him about it. Again, there are basically three different responses to suffering in our lives. One is we just walk away from God. We just say, well, God, I didn't sign up for this. I'm gone. We can curse God and walk away. And that is what Satan is banking on in Job's life. He thinks there's going to come a time when Job's suffering so much, he's just going to walk away. Secondly, we can pretend everything is fine. We sort of bury our questions. And I want to say that's probably what Job's friends would like Job to do. Job, just stop it. Just say some nice things about God, please. We sort of just make our suffering a no-go area. We just never talk about it. That's what Job's friends would counsel him. The third response is to ask your questions and grapple with God. And that's what Job does. And at the end of the book, spoiler alert, God commends him. He says, you have spoken right about me, Job. It reminds me of that story in the book of Genesis where Jacob, in the middle of the night, he's scared. He's about to meet the brother he thinks wants to kill him. And in the middle of the night, suddenly he starts, a stranger attacks him. And he wrestles with the stranger until daybreak. And towards the end, he realizes he's not just wrestling with a stranger, he's wrestling with God. And what does Jacob say? He says, I'm not going to let go until you bless me. I'm not letting go until you bless me. And God does bless Jacob. He transforms him. Jacob walks with a limp from that night onward, but he walks knowing his God. Job says, I'm not going to let go until you show me what you're doing, Lord. And we're going to see, he doesn't get answers to every one of his questions, but he doesn't curse God. He grapples with God. He holds on to God. He stays close to God. And what difference does that make to us? It means we can do the same. It means we can go to God in our suffering. He is big enough to take that. He invites us to come to him. He knows how much we need to come to him. So how do we respond to suffering in our lives? We admit that suffering is painful. We need to be honest about that. We bring our suffering and our questions before God. Be honest with him. And finally, I think Job's questions are light the way for the coming of Jesus into the world. We said last week, the suffering of Job will always be pointing us forward. In a sense, Job doesn't make sense as a book without the end of the story in the New Testament. And Job shows us that only a suffering God can help us in our suffering. Fast forward to the New Testament and Luke chapter 24. On a road to a town called Emmaus, the risen Jesus meets with two of his disciples, and they are grieving over Jesus' death. They think all their hopes are gone. They think God has abandoned his people, but Jesus challenges them. He says this, the risen Jesus speaking, "How foolish you are and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in the scriptures concerning himself. So Jesus tells us in the New Testament, he had to suffer. He's the fulfillment of all the promises of the Old Testament, that suffering has always been part of God's saving purposes for his people. Jesus supremely suffers. But actually, people who follow Jesus will also experience times of suffering in their relationship with him. And it's worth speculating, maybe on that road to Emmaus, did Jesus open up the book of Job? Did he say, and actually here's another bit of the Old Testament, Job, this man's suffering looks forward to my suffering. See, all the longings of the Old Testament are met in Jesus, and that includes the longings of Job, the longings Job has for his suffering to come to an end, for it to have a purpose and a meaning, and the longing that Job has actually to meet with God in his suffering. Just the final bit, flick forward to chapter 9 of Job for a second. We've got Job still wrestling here, and he says he knows enough about God to know that as a sinful human being, he could never meet with God. So chapter 9, verse 2, "How can mere mortals prove their innocence before God? Though they wish to dispute with him, they couldn't answer him one time out of 1,000. His wisdom is refined, his power is vast. Who has resisted him and come out unscathed?" You see, Job says, God's too great for me. I want to talk to him, but I also know that I can't talk to him. Look at verse 32 of chapter 9. Again, he says, "He is not a mere mortal like me that I might answer him, that we might confront each other in court." It just feels hopeless. But then, verse 33, Job expresses a hope that would seem impossible to him, but actually stands as one of the greatest pictures of Jesus we have anywhere in the Old Testament. Job says, he cries out, "If only there were someone to mediate between us, someone to bring us together, someone to remove God's rod from me so that his terror would frighten me no more. Then I would speak up without fear of him. But as it now stands with me, I cannot." See, Job says, I can't just talk to God, but if only there was someone, if only someone could mediate between us, if only someone would make it possible for me to talk to God. And of course, we read that after Jesus, after the cross and the resurrection, and we say, Job, that hope is not hopeless. That mediator came, and his name was Jesus, the Son of God and the Son of Man, one with God and one with us. Emmanuel, God with us, the one who removes God's rod from us. We've no fear of punishment for any sin before God now because Jesus took that punishment on the cross. He took the full brunt of God's wrath on our sin. And it's because of Jesus that Christians are not overwhelmed by suffering, that we have something to say in the face of suffering. It's because of Jesus when we cry out, my God, why is this happening? We actually notice that Jesus said the same thing on the cross. It's because of Jesus that we have hope in the face of suffering. Job glimpses that really imperfectly. We, praise God, see it more clearly because of his grace towards us. Hebrews chapter 4 says, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to feel sympathy with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need." Jesus makes the difference. Job longs for that difference. we get to experience that difference in our suffering. How do we respond to suffering? We need to be honest with ourselves and others that it hurts. Job models that for us. We need to be honest with God about our questions and our pain. Job models that for us. And we need to draw near to God through Jesus, our mediator, the one who stands between us and God, the one who suffered in our place, to find the grace and the mercy to help us in our time of need. These are dark chapters in Job, but they look forward to the coming light of Jesus, the Savior of the world.